On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Okay, everyone, before we get into this episode, I just want to give a shout out to TeamWorks for sponsoring this episode. TeamWorks, the operating system for sports, powers more than 6,000 sports organizations around the world, including teams across all major professional leagues. TeamWorks is the home of best-in-class products for each stage of the player lifecycle. It's one complete solution that connects, focuses, and empower support staff and players to drive team performance. Thank you again to TeamWorks for sponsoring the episode. And with that being said, let's get into the interview with Brett.
All right, everybody. I'm here with Brett Platts of the Texas Rangers organization. Brett, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Appreciate you having me on. Brett Platts, SNC within the Texas Rangers organization. Spent this last year both in low A and high A of the org. And then prior to that, I was in the Dominican Republic with the Chicago Cubs for a year. And then before that, it was a short stint of about a 4-week internship at the University of Iowa before I got the call to go join pro ball at the Cubs.
Okay. So low A and high A this past year. Are you moving up again this year? Are you going back to high A, low A? Where are you going?
I am moving up again. Move quick, apparently. Heading up to double A this year.
Nice. That's awesome, man. Congrats.
Appreciate it.
So was baseball always your goal in college? Did you kind of just have an open mind and you happened to fall into baseball? Like, what did the journey look like for you pre-baseball and, like, early college days?
Yeah, I think, like, baseball's probably always been a part of me. I moved away at a young age to pursue a baseball academy at like the age of 15, went to the other side of the country. So baseball has kind of always been with me. And I never really knew what to do outside of the realm of baseball. It's kind of just always been with me. So, you know, as I went through high school and obviously college, I kind of fell in love with strength and conditioning. And then it came a time of like, okay, what sport do I want to work with the most? And like, there was no question that, you know, it was going to be baseball.
Gotcha. So what is your best professional baseball story thus far? Either something that makes you laugh, something that you're proud of, just like what stands out in your mind the most thus far?
I think like the biggest thing, obviously, getting in it early would just be like obviously soaking in those moments of like, hey, you get the call to be at the affiliate level or just in general, you got the call to be working within professional baseball. So I think like just soaking in those moments and realizing, you know, where your feet are. Because I think oftentimes that you can kind of overlook that and you just kind of run through the motions and it's just go, go, go. But oftentimes, like, especially everybody I've met, it's like reflection can be kind of a hard aspect to grasp. So kind of taking those moments and just making sure you're, you know, present for once. And then obviously the minor leagues, like, there's so many stories. One in particular for low A would have been, probably I was lifting pitchers. I think it was at Fredericksburg. I was lifting pitchers during the game, probably about 40 minutes, came out. Everybody's like gathered around second base. And it was kind of like, we're playing on turf. It was like a colder environment. So like, I'm already freaking out, having a heart attack, make sure everybody's alive out there. And then started to make my way down to the dugout, kind of walked past second base and they're fiddling with the base. And I'm like, well, what are they doing? And I did grounds crew for like 4 years. So I'm like, just get a new base, guys. Like, we can probably figure this one out. And then sure enough, like the concrete barrier underneath the turf broke. So all of a sudden, like second base was just broke all of a sudden. So at this time, I think there was a stream. So the AT was getting calls. I was getting calls. I'm just like, make sure obviously players are all right. So I texted the assistant director, Logan Franston at the Rangers. I was like, listen, like, the second base broke. He's like, what are you talking about? I was like, yes, I don't know what to tell you. Like, concrete broke, second base broke. Welcome to minor league baseball. And he's like, I've never heard of that one before. I was like, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. Game's postponed now.
Yeah, that's, I was going to ask, like, what happened? Did you just not play the game? Like,
canceled, Cancel the game.
Wow. I've done a lot of these episodes, and I always ask this question. I have not heard that one either. I'm with Logan on that one. I have not heard that one.
I've never heard a second base being broke. And then the strength coach in me is just like, it's a lot of force going to second base. Must be proud of my guys.
What was it like? What led to it breaking? Like I'm not grasping it, I guess.
Somebody slid in, and I think the cleat got underneath the base, and then they just popped it right off. And then apparently just ripped the concrete out. So they were working on it all night, apparently. And then we had a doubleheader the next day. I think it was on a Sunday too. So that was a long road trip home.
That's an incredible minor league story. And one of the things in there that like I don't want to go missed is like, you're talking about it being cold, playing on the turf. You're already freaking out. Like, I would say everybody that's listening that has done strength and conditioning in baseball probably has had those moments where we're in like pure panic mode of like, something is going to go wrong. And like everybody else around you, like nobody's feeling it. They're just like, oh yeah, we're just playing today. And you're sitting there like panicking, like something is going to go wrong today. And so it's like, it's almost hard to like relieve yourself of that and like, hey, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But I know that I would be confident to say like almost all of us have probably had that moment on multiple occasions. Yeah. And then something happens and you're just like, fuck, I knew it.
You just knew something was going to happen. When there's like eight players gathered around second base and you can't see what's going on, it's pure panic. You're like, please, no.
Yeah, and you can't do anything about it. You can't do anything. There's nothing you can do about it. And I guess it's probably good practice for us to just like let go of what we can't control. We always talk about like control what you can control. And we want to control more than we can, I think, sometimes. But those are those moments where you're just like, you know, what can I do? And like, you just feel helpless and you want to help, you want to put the players first, but you literally just like, I don't know what to do. I can't fix second base and get this game going, you know, but also like, thank God nobody like broke their leg or anything on the slide, you know?
Exactly.
So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Yeah, I think like the biggest thing on my stance, just feel like athlete monitoring. Like, I feel like that's a very important part of the game within minor league baseball. Like, especially the higher levels you go up, like it becomes less about strength, power, and speed are essential components of an athlete, but it's more like, can we create a routine for them to go out and play every single day? Because at the end of the day, we're prepping them to play 162 games. So I think my biggest thing is like, there's so many tools out there that can be utilized, you know, for our use, but also the players and the coaches. That is objective data. It could be force plates. It could be catapult. It could be polar. It could be questionnaires, but something to supplement your subjective eye, and present it to both the players and the coaches. Like, hey, like, I know you're not feeling your best, and like, that's okay. Like, you play every single day. Like, this is the sport of baseball, and like, fatigue is definitely going to set in. It's just a matter of like, can we track it? Can we have a longitudinal approach to data where we can get to it early?
And that would probably lead me right into my next question that I have for you. So you have written a Simply Faster article on athlete monitoring, specifically with jump data. So like, if you don't mind, let's dig into that a little bit further and kind of go down this monitoring path and maybe specifically with the article, but also just in general, like what kind of practices you've seen work, not work, maybe some that are better than others, like how you're making it digestible for players and coaches, like kind of give me the run of the mill of what that article looks like. And then we'll dive in a bit further if you don't mind.
Yep, oh, absolutely. Yeah, the article, I originally read it when I was down in the Dominican with Chicago Cubs. The article is basically about the utilization of counter-movement jumps and specific metrics. Throughout the article, it basically detailed the peak power metric. But basically, it's just, again, that longitudinal approach of like, how often can we collect jumps? Down there was basically every day to every second day. So we would collect all those jumps, have a longitudinal approach, and then just look for like decrements, look for a 5% decrement in performance over the course of, you know, 2, 3, 4 jumps, and then have that conversation with the hitting coach, the pitching coach, the manager. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to be like, yeah, like I see it, because they watch the game of baseball. They know their players, as do we. But they definitely know when a guy is just, you know, not his best at that moment. And now, like, obviously that's a subjective viewpoint, but we have objective data to be like, you're right. Like, it's, he's tired and it's okay to be tired. So let's dial back what we can. Throughout that article, it basically detailed like methods that you could go about dialing back overall workload, because in professional baseball, like, we, for me personally, I had guys for probably about an hour per week. So I had an hour total because we had two lifts, about 30, maybe 40 minutes each session. So an hour plus. The reality is their workload on field and in practice is going to be more diminishing to their fatigue versus them just being in the weight room. So having that conversation is easier said than done, because you have to have a good relationship with the hitting, pitching, catching, manager, everybody, all aspects of player development. And to go forward, you just have that conversation of like, okay, instead of like, you know, 45 minutes during BP, can he just do his round, go up to get recovery modalities at the AT? Yeah. Okay. Well, let's do that. Let's start somewheres and let's see how he feels and bounces back.
So you were jumping those guys almost every day then?
Yep.
How was buy-in with that? It's probably a little different down at the academy versus at the higher levels, but any pushback on that?
The front office was really good about it. So that was really good because we had buy-in up top and it basically just trickled down. But the players loved it. I mean, it was just a competitive day. Like every time we basically would go through, they would jump and then start their lift. So we had two strength coaches down there. So either be myself or someone else, and they would run either the four splits or the four. They would come over, jump, and then they would eventually start their lift. So it was nice because everybody would huddle around and everybody wants to see their metrics. And that's like the other thing too. Like everybody wants to know what their jump height is, their peak power, their RSI. Like they all want to have the best numbers. So I think having that along with a whiteboard of a leaderboard of like, hey, this is what you're at. Every day they came in, they enjoyed jumping on the force plates and just like see how high I can get. And then when they were kind of disappointed with their numbers, it's like, that's when you have the coaching moment of like, you are not going to PR every single time. Like, it's not going to happen. You're going to be tired. Fatigue is going to set in, and that's okay. But let's see where you're at again next time we jump.
Yeah, I think that's probably like the one. I'll say 2 points to this. Like, first off, obviously you're showing the data to players, and it's shocking how much data gets collected sometimes without the player seeing it, or without like a follow-up progression to that and plan of attack with that. And yep. I think that goes a long way in buy-in, right? Is like showing the data. Obviously they're competing with each other. And then, you know, you talk about discussions with the coaching staff and like making adjustments appropriately, like having a, because of this, we're doing this plan, I think helps with buy-in there. And then the other aspect, right, is as a coach, it's like when you see a jump, a lot of times I can tell, especially the guys that I'm around a lot, when they jump, like if a jump is better or worse than their last ones. And I start formulating in my mind, like, this conversation is going to go one of two ways. Either they had a better jump and we like keep encouraging them to do what they're doing, or they had a worse jump and we have to explain again what the steps forward are. And as you said, like, you're not going to PR every time. And a lot of times I can see that in real time, and then the data supports it. Not always, obviously, but you tend to know your guys enough that you're like, that did not look good. And even they'll tell you like, that third jump didn't feel that good. And it shows on the data. And, you know, one, it's a teaching moment of like, you're in tune with your body, right? Like, you knew that wasn't a good jump and the data supports what you were feeling. Two, like, this is our plan of attack moving forward. And three, like you said, the next time you jump, I would anticipate it's back up based on this plan. And if not, we'll continue adjusting. And having those conversations, I think, goes a long way with buy-in. It sounds like you were doing a really good job with that with those guys. And then kind of along the way, now obviously you come to Texas, you're moving up the ranks. Like, what were you able to take from that to bring to a new staff? Is there anything that you brought along with you that you're like, I think we can implement this? Is it like, we may not have the same force plate data, but we can monitor using X, Y, and Z, Catapult, like you talked about, or something else? Like, what are you taking from that experience that's helping you in your current experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I think like a big reason why, you know, Logan Franz took a chance on me would just be like the sports science background that I gained at the Cubs. I had good mentors there. I had Corey Kennedy, who's now the director at Sacramento Kings. I had John Abbott, who's still the sports scientist at the Cubs. Like, that's kind of where I learned the wealth and knowledge of sports science and probably where I fell in love with sports science. So I think like going through that interview process before I even had the job was just like, wow, this guy like really, really likes sports science. And it's like, yeah, I do. And it's an evolving field and it's only going to continue to get better. So I think that's kind of a main reason why I was brought on to hopefully supplement the already existing protocols that were going on there. Like Kevin Varitek, our sports scientist at the Rangers, does a phenomenal job. And we always have, you know, elaborate conversations on like, hey, what if we did this? Does this metric do this? Do a linear regression model? Like what correlates with what? I think those are just like conversations that need to be had within every organization. Like you always have to question why and what's going on. And if you're not, I feel like you're going to get, you know, left behind in a way.
Yeah. And I think having, like, I know Kevin personally, obviously, I think having that strength and conditioning background makes the science side of it like stronger for everybody, right? It's like, we understand the game, we understand how they play, we understand the training that goes in, and then we see kind of these trends on the sports science side, and now we can make appropriate adjustments in our program design because we have that type of background, we have the experience with those guys, and we've been able to connect with coaching staffs ahead of time, so we kind of have those interpersonal skills as well. Has that kind of been your experience as well?
Yep, absolutely. I think like you can collect all the data in the world, but I think about how you use that data and distribute it to both the players and the coaching and the S&C staff and the athletic trainers and the sports psychologists. Like there's a lot of data out there. I think it's just about creating relationships with everybody and then displaying the data that you have. Because if you just show up somewhere and start throwing data around, they have no idea what the terms are. They're going to have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. But if you gradually build up that relationship and, you know, show them data, walk them through it, this is the terminology and like how this can benefit the players, like they appreciate that, because at the end of the day, everybody's trying to learn, everybody's trying to get better.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, you know, the point you just made there of like, we're all here to help the players, right? And if we can make the data presentable to the fact that like this will, there's no guarantees, right? Like nothing that you say is like, I guarantee this guy will get better if we do this, but based on my experience, my education, and what this data is showing, if we implement X, Y, and Z, we have a really good chance of either improving the performance or decreasing the risk of injury, making them more available. And by being more available and playing more, they will gain those skills to help them be better and help the team win. And I think yep. the big thing with data, and we've mentioned this a couple of times now, is just making it easily digestible. And it's almost on us and the sports science staff to like really get into like the nitty gritty of the data and then make it, I don't want to say watered down, that's probably not the right way, but I think digestible is probably the appropriate, like if I'm a front office member, I need a one or two sentence snapshot of like what the data says and how we're going to use it to make a player better. And that in itself is a skill also, right? That's something that you probably have to develop over time of just, you know, I want to try to present it to you this way. When I was with this organization, we did it this way, but they want it this way here. Like, how do I make it so that I can give you this report? You can read it. You know what we're working on, and you can trust your strength staff and your sports science staff. Because I think that's a big thing that's going on in baseball, is like the grass is greener somewhere else sometimes. And it's like, well, you're not making this make sense for me and somebody else can. So like either yep. make it make sense or we're going to bring somebody else in and you're out.
Yep.
Same experience for you then?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's exactly how it is. I mean, if you were to break down and show somebody like a linear regression model of the correlation of two metrics between like counter movement jump metrics and then like blast data, they're gonna have zero idea what you're talking about. But if you can do like one to two sentences of like, this is why this correlates or this is why someone's fatigued, like they'll understand that. But again, like what you said, like it's a skill to simplify things and display it to both coaches and players.
Yeah, you don't want to make it so simple that you're, you know, you're making it look like it's a waste of time, but you don't want to make it so complicated that, you know, the average person isn't, one, they don't have the time to read it and digest it, and two, even if they did, they don't actually understand it, and then it becomes just, you know, extra papers on their desk or whatever. Like, finding that sweet spot takes time and experience and skill development. And I think, like we said earlier, I think having the strength and conditioning background and kind of bleeding into sports science helps people like yourself and people like Kevin, because you understand like what the plan is going to be moving forward. And then kind of as a follow-up for me is like, are you using this data more to take things away or like add things? Like a guy is trending really well, he's been training hard in the cage or on the mound, like, are you pushing to keep going with that? Or are you using it more of like, hey, he's overworked, we need to cut back on X, Y, and Z?
Depending on the guy, I always look at it as like, how much stimulus is too much for each guy? And I think the data can help reflect that. It's always a fine line. Like, you don't want to underdose them, but you don't want to overdose them. So it's always a fine line between just the appropriate amount of stimulus where they can still play every single day, they're still having adaptations, and they're still feeling good, and they're still following their routine to go out and play every single day. So I think that's like, to sum up, I think like that's the best way to put it, is just like, you know, how much stimulus does this guy need on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I think that's honestly a perfect explanation. I would say that's spot on. And I would say that's like the tightrope that we walk, right? Is like, whether it's sports science or strength and conditioning, athletic training, baseball coaching, like, everybody wants to have their influence on the player, and everybody thinks that they are making a difference in that player's career trajectory, or if they're in the big leagues, like their immediate career. But I think sometimes it gets to a point where too many people are saying too many things or trying to get a player to do too much, and fatigue kicks in, and then all of a sudden it's that much harder of a battle. Or the other side of that is like, you know, if we think they're fatigued, like we cut back on their lifting, and then the hitting coach is like, you need to cut back on your swings. And then the manager is like, you know, don't take BP today. Like, I think that communication in between the departments really becomes valuable there, because like you said, you can underload guys as well. And ultimately, in my experience, most guys want to do more. And sometimes it's good, but most of the time, I think it's probably not, especially with the amount that we play, we travel, we practice. Like, there's just so much that goes on every day that there's opportunities for guys to work on things. And I think they get lost in like the, oh, I didn't realize I took 500 swings today. But tomorrow I have to go to the cage to work on top hand drills. And then like they repeat the same process, and they don't realize that over the course of a week, they've been averaging 450 swings a day. And then they're like, dude, I'm smoked. And it's like, well, yeah, we flew three time zones. You took 450 swings a day. And like, and I think the tricky part there is finding what that line is for different guys. I've been around guys that are obsessed with their swing, and they'll take 1,000 swings a day, and they can still go out and, you know, pump 30 homers a year. I've been around guys that take 10 swings a day and they feel like their swing is in a good spot and they can go out and be an all-star too, you know, and everywhere in between. So it's not like a one size fits all. This is the, you know, the application, like, yes, at 100 swings, everybody gets tired and then you're losing, you know, it's diminishing returns. It's like going back to really the root of this is like the athlete monitoring is like, what is the appropriate dose for that individual? And the only way you know that without guessing is monitoring them, to be honest.
Yep. No, absolutely. That's the name of the game. Like, I think as like a strength coach and obviously a sports science realm, it's like, we always want to be like, well, less is more. And like, yes, that holds true to a lot of cases. But again, like what you said, like everybody's different. Some people can take more and some people can take less. And that's when it comes down to, again, it's like their routine. Okay. Like, you feel good here. Let's stick with that. We can adjust as we keep going.
Yeah. I mean, that was literally the very first point you had made, was just creating routines, right? And like finding ways to make consistency for players. And I think if a guy shows up to spring training and he's been taking 500 swings a day in the off season, like, he's probably at a better spot in terms of his readiness compared to the guy that just picked the bat up the week before for the first time all offseason. And, yep. you know, you the reality is you have both of those cases, and both of those guys get lumped into the same BP groups, the same early work groups, and then the one guy's dragging ass and the other guy is flying, and they're like, well, this guy's not working hard enough. And it's like, well, he might have just started behind. Like, we might have had to slow play his progression, and everywhere in between, you know what I mean? And it's the unique demands of our game and the fact that we play and practice every day and travel and have all this other stuff. And I think I would agree with you, most of the time less is more, but not always. And there are guys that if you try to take things away from them, they will really be out on you, and they really do yep. want you to tell them, like, hey, doing more is okay. And I think when those guys come to us, it's like, I want you to do more. And if that's the case, I want the more to be appropriate. Like, you talk about maybe doing recovery methods in the training room. That's still doing something, but it's doing something more productive than harmful. And finding those avenues for those type of guys, I think goes a really, really long way, because those are your guys that are the trickiest, is the guys that are really high motor guys. They have a huge capacity for work. They want to do work. And when they have downtime, they feel like they're not accomplishing things. And it's like, how do you keep them busy? How do you educate them on what is and isn't appropriate? And ultimately, like, how do you feed that desire for them? Because those are, I mean, those are the guys that really, like, the guys that are obsessed with getting better, like, they're going to do it whether you're there or not. They're going to go find a cage to hit in if you don't let them hit in your cage. And then you run into the fact that you don't have eyes on them. So they may be taking even more swings than you realize.
Yep. So. Absolutely.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part one of our two-part episode with Brett. I hope you enjoyed this one. He's got a lot of really good information and ideas about athlete monitoring, and I would highly recommend checking out his article on Simply Faster, which will be linked with the show notes. Three things that I took from Brett in this episode: find something objective within athlete monitoring to help supplement what you see with your subjective coaching eye. Finding ways to make data more digestible for everyone is a skill that can help you advance in the field. And less is more is generally the right approach, but does not apply in every situation. Before we sign off, I just want to give one more thank you to our sponsor, Teamworks, for sponsoring this episode. And with that being said, we'll talk to you on the next one.